Thank you for your comments. There are some questions. I'm going to make one comment, and I'll give it over to Mr. Lindsay. You had said earlier that, you game the system, and obviously didn't comply with the law. When you're just a little bit of advice.
Mr. Chair, I didn't say that I didn't not comply with the law. The law allowed a month look-back period.
Okay.
So I followed that. I didn't think I was going to get over 10%. The only reason I did was because we had issues here and at the city of Atlanta. Those combined took me to about 14%.
Well, you said openly a minute ago that you gamed the system. How did you game the system again?
Well, I was putting in quotes, game the system, because I was testing the 10%. The legal opportunity to check as to whether or not my 10% of my working hours went to lobbying. I mean, I guess maybe gaming the system isn't the right way to do it. To say it, but I had the legal ability under the ethics law to see if I would get the 10% before registering as a lobbyist. That's what I did. I followed the law.
Did you operate in good faith?
Absolutely. I tracked down to 15-minute increments how often I did work lobbying or on legislation versus all the other things that I do, including both here at the state capitol and at the city of Atlanta.
I would just submit to you, I don't like to make things personal. I never have. I don't know you. But, anyone who's going to stand in judgment of someone else really ought not to go ahead and proactively go out of their way to game the system in order to make a point. You can write an op-ed.
Okay.
But don't game the system.
Well, for some,
no, operate good faith to a certain extent. That's the expectation. Mr. Lindsay.
Thank you. Let me sort of build on that a bit for a minute, Mr. Perry, and I appreciate your candor. I think that you were, quite frankly, telling exactly what you did when you first made the original statement. But that's not the only time that you tried to minimally follow the law, is it not? I mean, for instance, is the Georgia Alliance of Ethics Reform, is that a registered, is that a registered lobbyist as well for organization lobbying here?
Each one has lobbyists representing organizations, but it's not an organization. It's an alliance of some registered, some not registered organizations. That's not trying to take advantage of the system at all.
So you don't believe that organization, that umbrella organization, shouldn't have to register?
No, I don't.
Do you believe that we should require an umbrella organization overseeing other lobbying groups? If there's an umbrella organization, do you believe that we should conclude in the law a requirement that those kind of organizations also register? Do you believe that would be important in terms of open and transparent government?
I think in terms of open and transparent government, I can only speak to the alliance and what we do. Everything we do is open and transparent. We have registered lobbyists, and those of us that need to be registered are and do. Those of us that aren't required by law aren't registered as lobbyists and shouldn't have to.
Well, I'm asking a broader question now. Do you believe that an organization that purports to have some type of umbrella over several other organizations to try to come up with one common goal in terms of lobbying down here, do you believe that we should be including within the law a requirement that organization register? I'm asking.
No.
If there is somebody who is being compensated to lobby, they should, yes, register to lobby. If there's somebody involved in the organization that's not paid and does not receive benefits, then no, they shouldn't have to register.
Okay, so an umbrella organization I'm trying to get an answer to my question if I can. I'm asking a simple question. Should an umbrella organization that is lobbying down here have to register in addition to the subparts that are part of that alliance? I'm just trying to figure out where we're going with the bill.
I think that simplifies it too much. You can't say yes or no. I think it has to get back to the individual being required to lobby. If you're receiving compensation for lobbying, you should have to register. If you don't, you should not. And I want to clarify, under our current system, in which you have to pay $320, file reports every 2 weeks, and possibly get fined up to $10,000.
Which gets to my next point regarding, we talked earlier about the problem with other people gaming the system in different ways that we went toward paid versus unpaid lobbyists. And I really appreciated some of the comments that we heard earlier from other organizations under your umbrella that wanted to focus on expenditures. Would you agree that we ought to be focusing on the expenditures of that individual or the organization rather than on whether or not someone was paid or not paid? Wouldn't that be a better way to try to capture?
That would be another way to capture it. And the way that the current law does with the $1,000 trigger, I think, helps that. And that should be looked at, absolutely.
Would it not be better to go ahead and just drop that down to zero rather than $1,000?
Yeah. That's food for thought.
That's
The getting back to the Alliance and its operation, who paid for the bus tour?
The bus tour was actually not something that involved the Georgia Alliance for Ethics Reform.
Yeah.
The bus tour was three groups.
Yeah.
Common Cause Georgia, Georgia Conservatives in Action, and the Georgia Tea Party Patriots.
Okay, did y'all list that as an expenditure?
Those organizations filed a ballot committee and worked as a ballot committee and collected money and disclosed all expenses and contributions.
Oh, good, good. So that was included? I'm just trying to see.
Yes, sir.
Trying to make sure that we're being as transparent as possible.
We are.
Have you guys always reported every expenditure that you have in terms of lobbying?
As far as I know, yes, sir.
Yeah. Y'all did, however, file one about 6 months late, correct?
File one 6 months late?
No, sir. A disclosure.
No, sir.
Didn't you, according to, I saw one AJC article that indicated that y'all failed to divulge the fact that y'all spent money on dinners for legislators last summer.
Okay, we amended a report, yes, sir. After taking a look at the law, realizing we made a mistake and went back and corrected it, yes, sir.
About 6 months late.
I'm not sure of the timing, but I'll take your word for it.
Okay. Did y'all pay a fine?
No, sir, because we did, in good faith, file a report, and we amended that report once we figured out that maybe we ought to go back and do so.
Should lobbyist organizations such as y'all that file something so late be able to amend reports 6 months late? Let's just say, take for instance, if Oil Company A failed to file a expenditure report during the session and filed it instead 6 months later, would you expect them to be fined?
I think that with
a yes or no.
Okay, can you repeat the question?
If let's just say hypothetical oil company A spent money during the General Assembly session on a legislator and then waited 6 months before filing a report on that, should they be fined?
I know you want a yes or no question, but again, I mean, things aren't that black and white. They're a little gray. Did that oil company forget to file a couple of $100 worth of dinners? Should they be fined? Probably not. If they made a mistake and they corrected it, I don't think anybody wants to see somebody fined for realizing there was a mistake and correcting it. Now, if they chose not to file a report for 6 months that involved thousands of dollars, maybe even, you know, whatever amount that was in some way deliberately withheld, then yeah, they should get fined. And thankfully, in this legislation, you're looking to give rulemaking authority back to the commission so that everything doesn't have to be that black and white, that there actually can be some gray areas that are determined by using common sense as opposed to just the letter of the law that was written in the dark.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Mr. Lindsay, after I wrote this question down, may have touched on it, but just to be clear, I think I wrote this down when you said it. You said if you're not receiving compensation, you should not have to register as a lobbyist. If you're not receiving compensation to lobby.
Or if you're not benefiting from legislation.
If you're not personally benefiting from legislation.
Well, I can give you an example.
Rather than an example, how do you define benefiting from legislation?
I'd love to sit down and talk about that because I know our time is limited, and so it's not, again, a simple answer. But if you would meet with us, we'd be glad to sit down and hash that out. Or put further thought, and we'll put it down in writing and give it to you.
Well, of course, I'm sure everybody would love to have your thoughts, and I think all our email addresses are publicly available. I think I may have received emails from you in the past. But I think you touched on kind of the crux of this, and I think something needs to be said here that may have been lost throughout the course of this, and you made the comment, and others have made the comment about this process occurring in the dark. I think it bears saying, I want to say thank you to the ethics working group and the product they put forward today. We spent 90% of our time talking about what the definition of a lobbyist is And it's a critical, critical definition, because that is the linchpin of who has to report their expenditures and who doesn't. You would agree with that, right?
Yes.
I mean, we've got to get that right, because if it's too narrow, people that want to game the system like you did, not with nefarious motives purportedly, but people that you prove that it can be gained, they escape from having to report making expenditures on any of us up here. So you would agree that the definition of lobbyist is absolutely fundamental to the integrity of our entire system here?
Yes, absolutely.
So, and I think the sense has been, well, maybe we err on the side of capturing too many people in this first draft. Or maybe we err on the side of too many people being required to pay the fee in the first draft. I think that's the side we need to err on, given the fact, in the first draft, recognizing, I think you've heard an earnestness from all the members, including the chairman, from the outset, that we're going to take a look at these provisions as they go forward and get it right. But the definition of lobbyists is just fundamental to this whole process. And if we leave loopholes, people are going to game the system, and they're not going to have to report their expenditures on legislators. And we're right back where we started. That's why the definition of lobbyist has to be a part of this. But what hasn't been said is this is the first public hearing this year on a real bill, a proposal that's going to be law, not the change in the Senate rules that they put forward that literally is so fraught with loopholes and possible abuses, it really doesn't even pass the laugh test. They have to put it forward in a legislative hearing where folks like y'all can go in and talk about it. That's the legislative process, and that's why we're here. This is not being submitted, this version on paper being submitted to the governor today for signature. So I just want to thank the authors of the bill, that presented the bill, Mr. Lindsay, who's on the bill, Mr. Smyre, who's on the bill, for putting forth a very, very, very aggressive measure that will fundamentally change the manner and the amount of which money can be spent on public officials. And to the extent that we need to work on making sure we don't cast too wide of a net to impact First Amendment rights, I think the chairman said it from the outset. We're going to do that. I'm committed to that, and believe me, you've got a bunch of hardworking folks sitting up here that are going to do that. And in concert with any comments that y'all send, we're going to consider them. So thank you, Mr. O'Neill, for presenting this bill, and thank you to members of the Ethics Working Group for putting forward this excellent first step. A real, real reform, and Mr. Chairman for conducting an excellent hearing today and giving the public an opportunity to participate.
Thank you, Ms. Shulman.
Thank you. I just really have a comment about the process myself. Definitely, I want to applaud the author of the bill and the working committee. All these, you know, this is our first meeting that's open to the public. We definitely are here for comments. Nothing is being voted out today. That we're going to continue to work on this bill. It's important that we hear from our citizens. I think we heard from you guys when we got the bill, the concern about the citizens, you know, the PTA moms or the nurses or different individuals coming up. That is not our desire at all. We call ourselves proudly members of the People's House, and that's where we're here to represent you guys. So I look forward to addressing that issue, but I think the thing that has been kind of interesting, it seems to have been lost in a lot of discussion today in the testimony. Even one of the, Terry Green discussed the amendment to this session, or the referendum this, the questionnaire, the ballot question. And the majority of citizens said they wanted a $100 cap. Well, the House and the author of this legislation knows that there are many loopholes within the cap and took it even a step further. I think you definitely should be applauded for that. And look forward to working with this group and hearing from you guys as we address the problems in this bill.
Reviewing a very brief history of time.
If there were some comments directed my way, could I address those before we close out?
I'll be very brief.
Sure.
Because I think that, first of all, you know, mistakes can happen in a process. Mistakes can happen in these ethics laws. And I think that no one blames anybody or faults anybody for making a mistake. But those things are easy to fix by governing in the open, as we've talked about. The gamesmanship doesn't have to happen if we have more discussions like this. It was mentioned the rule versus the cap. I would contest that there are more loopholes in this ban versus the $100 cap that happened in the Senate.
Yes.
And I would like to have that discussion, and I'd love to have it publicly if we can. And I'll close out by just saying this, that, you know, there were some pointed questions today. I'm glad to answer them the best I can when I can. I may make a mistake with them, but if I do, I'll always come back and admit it, and I'm always glad to talk further about it. So I hope that, you know, there's just not the gamesmanship of trying to get somebody to say something so we can say, aha, gotcha. But we can continue the dialogue on both sides so that we can make sure that we come up with the best public policy possible. Thank you.
Mr. Perry, I'll respond to that and then close this meeting. I mean, we're citizen legislators. We don't have the, you know, this is not Congress where you have dozens of staff doing this to people. You know, look at the hand. Now, we're as accessible as air. So if anyone wants to talk to us about anything, all they need to do, I can only speak for myself, is pick up a phone or an email. And if someone sent an email, it comes right to me. There's no filter. There's no staff look at it. It comes right to me. So, you know, to this minute from your organization and from, you know, one or two others that may scream the loudest, I haven't had a direct communication. I'm very easy to work with. I've spent 14 years gathering that reputation, credible or not. So all I can do, all any of us can do, is be available to those who want to be constructive in their comments and offer real suggestions for improvements, because this is law. This is a point I wanted to make that I want to just end, and it's really a point that Chairman Smyer made. We started this really with the summer ballot, and if we learn nothing else, we know that we have to lead by example. And the leader of this body, the author of this bill, listened. He saw, he listened, he learned, and then you lead. And that's, and this, these two bills are an example of that. It is a first step. It is the only measure that I have seen to this minute in the General Assembly that has been introduced that has the force of law and provides the mechanism for enforcement of that law. Anything else is inadequate. Let's just be kind. Inadequate is kind. That's where we are. This is a process. We look forward to working with whoever wants to give us constructive feedback and input toward tailoring a very measured, well thought out, tightly defined law that we can be proud of. Why? Because to do nothing, to not do that, would not be responsive. And that's our first responsibility, as Chairman Smyer said, and that is to be responsive. We'll end with that. I appreciate your time, members. Thank you. You'll receive a notice on, this is important, hold on. You'll receive a notice on the subcommittee meeting. We will endeavor to put a substitute out as soon as we humanly can. At some point early next week, we will endeavor to have a meeting notice go out 24 hours in advance. We will endeavor to have that substitute out as soon as we can, you know, hopefully in conjunction with that meeting notice. You know, we'll get it as close as we can, but there will be an opportunity to review both the members and public. Let me just remind one thing. This is the first step. It goes to the Rules Committee and the Rules Committee Substantive Committee of Jurisdiction role. And then it goes to the Rules, and then it's still in the Rules Committee in its role as doorkeeper to the House floor. So let's just keep that in mind. And then it goes to the floor, and then Lord knows what they're going to do after that. So we'll go from there. Thank you. Hey,